It's Wednesday, March 11th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 139 of Hear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 1 minute. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Chris.
My name is Chad.
My name is Pat.
And we are recording live at Fear the Con 2. For anyone that is not here, you have missed a hell of a con.
Yes, you have.
Been great stuff this year. We've had a lot of good games going on. Have some improvements in the food area. Chris' wife, Julie, brought in, what are those, Carmelitas?
Carmelitas. Carmelitas and muffins as well. Yeah.
I'd be careful. That word sounds borderline racist. And they're also delivering food to the tables now, and we got, of course, the same free beer, and it's just been a great experience. We had a wing night at Cyberg's, had our own reserved room, cash bar, a buffet of food.
Cigar lighting demonstration.
Mm-hmm. Was anybody at the cigar lighting thing? What did you guys think of that?
I'm honest
with you. Good? You learned some stuff about cigars? Good. I am going to do that officially next year. I'm really going to do it. I talked about it. We kind of half-assed it this time, but... yeah, I had a good time with that.
Are you drawing us sitting here doing the thing? I'm looking at Noble Bear right now, and he's, like, sketching something out. Are you drawing us right now as we're doing the show?
No. That's a no. Yeah. You did know I finally saw the first pass at the Forum card game. You guys got that printed out last night.
Oh, by the way, that illustration, Pat's boobs are way too big.
Some would say not big.
Yeah, what happened is that Andy and I... We did some scramble. We threw in some filler and stuff, and just kind of made a stripped down kind of ghetto version of the game, ready for print. And then we basically did the con, then went to Watchmen, then got out of Watchmen at 3 o'clock. Then the Kinko's you recommended was 24 hours,
right?
So we zipped right over there and got it printed out. And and so now we've got something that we're playtesting for slot five.
Excellent, cool. Slot five. It's in.
Yeah,
I'm going to stop by at least for a couple minutes to check that out, see what's going on with that. I liked what I was seeing. It looks really good, and I can't wait till once you guys get this tested and fleshed out and the art completely finished of actually putting this thing into real print so people can get their hands on it.
So after seeing the movie last night, did you go back home and real quickly make a big blue Wang card for the deck?
I will now.
Put it down and play stops until somebody removes it.
Well, actually, no blue wangs. However, I have made a card that is the other head of Vecna.
Oh, I saw that one. That was really disturbing.
All right, and something we want to talk about today, just telling these guys before we kicked off the mics, at Gen Con last year, as you guys know, we did a Q&A. We might do a Gen Con again this year. But I want to try something a little different here and see how it goes. We're going to
try... be a T&A this time.
We are going to try doing a regular episode where that fourth mic is just going to be open to anyone that wants to walk up and get involved. So we're saying that with at least these people here in the room, instead of yelling at their iPod, they can come up here and just do it directly. And you have to send me an email and hope you get a response. So the topic for today is one that is fresh on everyone's mind, which is con gaming. And we talked about con games and writing con games in an episode a while back. But the topic I want to revisit because I've got some new thoughts on it. And also, last time we did this, we didn't have some of these hosts, and we didn't have all of those hosts out there. So this is going to be kind of interesting. First thing I want to talk about with con games is lack of preparation. I felt really bad coming into the con because I spent the last several days trying to finish con tasks that I procrastinated. And so I never finished the game that I procrastinated. So I'm sitting there during the first game slot trying to get everything together and finish up my notes and such. And I felt bad about this until I started looking around the room, seeing the amount of paperwork that was present at Wing Night, the amount of stuff that was going on in the first few minutes of the con, the number of people that suddenly found out that, oh, I'm waiting for the waitress to bring me something now serves as a delay. Does anyone sufficiently prepare for con game?
Bob, you actually had some decent advice on that I saw a couple days ago on Twitter about that. Go ahead.
Hi, Martian Bob, I'm from Iowa City.
First-time listener, long-time caller.
Yeah. I call you guys way too much, and I'm really sorry about that, but sometimes I just need to talk. Basically, I've run a lot of con games, and the only reason that I had a goodly number of of prepared con games, especially demos this time, is because I wrote them all last year. But yeah, a lot of the games that I ran today, some of them weren't prepared, but that's okay. What you really need to do when you're running a con game is you need to have the characters down. After that, everything is more or less great, because you're going to prepare way too much content. You're not going to get through it all. You probably, if you sit down and write a con game like you write even one night of gaming, even if you run 4 hours in one night and you're running a 4 hour slot at a con, you're going to get through maybe 2/3 of what you normally get through in a night.
All right, but let's talk characters. Let me tell you how I approach characters, and I want to hear how you approach them. What I found that works really well for a con game is I can't get too detailed, because if I do, none of that's going to come out. These people don't have time to really digest what they're reading and play it out. But if you give them nothing, they don't have anything to work with. Because one of the big things you're working past is the fact that you've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 strangers at a table. Nobody wants to talk first. And so what I found kind of works as a balance is I give people basically a social stereotype with a few kind of conditions to it. That you're the boisterous drunk, but you also kind of have this going on. So you're not a total walking stereotype. But it's still the type of thing that everyone, upon picking this up, can say, well, wait a minute, the doddering old man, I can relate to that. I know somebody like that. Chris is like that. And
I was waiting for it.
It was a softball pitch.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, that's kind of how I approach it. How do you do it?
So, yeah, I agree. And when I said you got to get the characters down, what I mean by that is you have to have all the numbers set. And they got to be easy to look at.
Yes.
You have to easily figure out what you're doing, because these people aren't going to want to navigate a Byzantine character sheet.
Yes.
And I do I actually do a very similar thing. For example, my Cthulhu Tech game.
Big quick side note there, the template is also the only thing you can't BS on the spot.
Yes. That is absolutely true. So like what I did for my Cthulhu Tech game is there's one character. She's an ex-cop. She's got a crush on this guy. He doesn't know it. That's it. There's another one. This guy, also next cop. He's the leader. That's it. There's this guy. He's really mean. He likes beating people up. That's it. And I do write a lot more fluff. I think people like reading it. I don't expect them to incorporate it necessarily. Like I give background on how these people got into whatever they're doing in the game. I think that people like reading that. I don't expect them to use it. And when they don't use it, I don't feel bad. But if you've got the characters down, after that, I write my arc, I write an outline, and everything else beyond that is just great.
How detailed are you with the arc? Well, I guess let me back this up a thought. The important thing about building the characters is the fact that, like you said, you don't have time to get through a really complicated plot. And so if the characters are right and the people get into them, they will create enough roleplay on the spot, generally speaking, that the game's going to go okay. But I've also sat in on games where maybe people just weren't jumping for whatever reason. The game wasn't grabbing their interest. The characters, they couldn't relate to characters. And maybe everything was great, but they're just kind of nervous and on the spot. And so now all of a sudden, the game master's sitting there, and he has to break this uncomfortable silence. And the only way to do this is with some kind of plot event.
So what I do with my plot is I have headers and bullets. So the headers will be characters. The characters are going to work at a warehouse undercover. The sub-bullets for that are, two of them are going to be working the security room, four of them are going to be walking beat. Another sub-bullet will be a delivery is going to come and there's going to be a weird box in there. They're probably going to want to check it out. Then another heading will be, they're going to come back to the warehouse at night and they're going to check things out. The sub-bullet of that will be they'll find the secret entrance. Another sub-bullet will be they have to fight these guys. That's about it. If you're going to have
that makes your games a little bit more railroady.
And con games, you want that.
Yeah.
You need that.
You need both.
The worst thing, and I've been to so many con games where this happens, where the GM is like, okay, here's the world you're in. What do you want to do? And I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, okay, I was 5 minutes late to the game. I spent 20 minutes looking over the character sheet. I've got 3.5 hours with this group of strangers who I don't know. I want to have some fun.
Right.
Give me somewhere to go.
Well, one of the core piece of advice we always give on Fear the Boot is know your group. And you're behind the eight ball because guess what? You don't know the group in all probability.
And you can't. There is no... I'm sure you guys know there is no one kind of con game.
I'm curious, did anyone in here not run a game because either you weren't sure how to write a game for strangers, maybe you thought it would take too much preparation or the amount of paperwork you thought you would have to do intimidated you, Yeah, why don't you guys come on up? I want to talk to you guys for a minute. Because I talked to someone who's not in here. I don't think he's in here. I don't see him in here. Who told me that he was going to run a game here, but stopped when he was through about, like, this stack of paper. I think he said he had 7 pages of plot notes. And it's like, man, you can't do that at this kind of game. Come on up. Steve Ruinster, right?
Right.
All right, Steve, where are you from?
Boston.
I had to think about that.
Yeah.
It's been a good con.
It's been a long time. It's going to be long.
All right. Steve, go on.
Tell us. Yeah, well, my general style of GMing is different. I let the players create a large part of the world.
Uh-huh.
So, like, they create their character background, where they're from, the type of magic system they use, the races. A lot of that stuff I let them generate, and then I wrap plots around it, because you can't do it at con game. And if you're running a regular group, you can have an off night. So, you know, this night the plot didn't work, I wasn't underprepared or overprepared, whatever. In a con game, you have to be on. But to me, that was a lot of a performance anxiety, thinking,
right,
how do I generate everything? Has to have great hooks, has to interest people, get them to the game in the first place, and you have to do your performance because you only got 3 hours.
So let's talk about 2 things in there. Your first point, if I'm following you right, was you're used to letting the players have a big hand in developing what it is they're doing, who they are. Obviously, you have to give that up at a con.
Right.
In a way, I think it's almost better to give it up because, of course, you can't write a plot, you can't shape a plot, if you don't know who these people are going to be.
Right.
But if you know that you've got the angry sergeant and then the love-lost girl and whatever, it lets you build stuff a little bit more. So I'm curious, how did that actually make it harder for you to write a con game? Just not your normal style?
Right. And one of the things I really enjoy about role-playing in general, and especially about GMing, is being surprised. So when I open it up and let the players, like, hey, invent a fantasy race, your characters from that race, tell me about it, I'm surprised. That wasn't one of the 3 things I was thinking of. And then if I sit down for a con game, I'm like, well, I have to think of a fantasy race, a background, a motivation. And then I'm thinking that the players are going to sit down and say, yeah, that's a dwarf with antennas or something on that. So and that's why it's easier to throw it out to a group. You know.
Well, you know something that may help you there that I've actually found in recent experiences doing Fear the Con 2, Fear the Con 1, is I found that if I keep the characters vague enough, what people tend to do, it's a great Hitchcockian thing. They read a few cues. And then they internalize it. And the end result, because I've not spelled out in great detail, is you would be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't be, by how much interpretation there can be within one character concept.
Yeah.
Having just run 2 Transformers games, I watched 2 guys play one character in particular very differently. Chris, who just actually walked in, I was just talking about you before you came in, and then Ed Sawyer over there, oh, there he is. Ed Sawyer over there both played the same character, and they had such radically different interpretations. I was very surprised by how they played them.
The 2 extremes that I don't want a character sheet with just stats and numbers and equipment on it, because I got nothing to go. You know, it's like, I can have that in my normal, you know, Sunday game, and over time I just develop it. But, you know, I just have this little bit to go on. And I don't want someone to hand me a character sheet and then an information packet detailing every aspect of my life. I want a couple of paragraphs. And I was in both Ed and Daniel's game over there, the Ghostbusters and the, yes, I was in the Shadowrun game, and they did that great. They gave me I think, Dan, you gave me about a paragraph to go on, and then Ed, you gave me, it was the qualities from Spirit of the Century. And I could look at those and kind of see, well, okay, I got this and this and this, and he's kind of like this, and so I can kind of, I want to do this with it. I want to do this with it. There's a couple of things that I don't like on either of these things. I'm just going to ignore them. And I kind of make that, and I kind of come up with a story. And stuff. Basically, what I'm saying is that as a player, I need just enough to hook into story-wise.
So now, Steve, I'm following you right. Then your second point was basically you're not sure what to do. It's hard to write a game for a bunch of strangers.
Right.
That's a huge one. Go ahead, if you got another question or something, go ahead and shoot it off. If not, go and sit back down. We're going to come back to that. That's a big one. But I don't want to leave poor Seneca here standing for too long, so...
I'll be okay.
Okay, good. Bring yourself... By the way, these mics are designed to not pick up side noise, so be sure to get in front of them. If you need to adjust it, do so. I can edit out the mess of, you know, the mic being moved around.
You're going to need to tilt it up and lean in.
Yeah, you're going to need to tilt it up.
Because you're like 8 feet okay. tall.
Yeah. You're a man of Ryan Dancy proportions. So.
I had to shape the head just so I didn't.
Just to get through,
yeah.
Okay.
Through the room. Yeah, absolutely.
First, Chris, mega dittos.
I'm sorry, what?
Mega dittos.
Mega dittos.
Sorry, a reference lost. My apologies.
Oh, yeah, but now I got to know.
Rush Limbaugh, his callers always call him and say mega dittos.
When they agree with him.
Okay.
Okay.
What the hell did I say? That you agree
Chad.
With?
So, Seneca. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay.
Most of my games are large world with a kind of elaborate plot that's going to eventually unfold, and things to happen that involve the characters' personalities that are going to be in it. And for me, a con game is, I don't know how to write for a very short block.
You know, I can give you a little bit of advice on that, but I definitely want to pitch this out to some other people. What I found and what I did with my games, both this year and last year, was I intentionally made the plot, there were many ways through it, and there were many points for it to end. If we were moving slow, they could get to here and then this would happen, and that would basically resolve the situation. But if they're moving really fast, then what we can do is say, okay, they're going to get there, but the MacGuffin's not there, and then here's another plot point where they're going to have to convince somebody to help them and then go up here and do a bunch of other stuff. But with a con game, I have found generally you can write them pretty short. You don't have to, if you're deciding which way to go, you're sitting in front of your notes, go to the short side, because by the time you get everyone sat down, you get them organized, you get them oriented, you kind of figure out what it is you're playing, you get through that first hour of everyone being uncomfortable, not doing anything, you generally don't have to have more than about a couple plot points before you're going to be out of time in the slot anyway. I mean, it's very, very short ideas. Okay, go ahead. If you got one more, go. If not, then have a seat, and we're going to...
Well, I think you've talked about it before, the creation of MacGuffin. That's not something that I have a lot of strength in. I tend to have kind of broad MacGuffins. I guess right. There's something happened, and I hope that they want to do something about it, as opposed to there's a thing that you need to
Well,
get.
I mean, it's a matter of scale. I mean, your MacGuffin is not a traditionally defined MacGuffin. It's not the object. Mm-hmm. It's the theme and the plot and the story.
It's social
and
injustice
adventure.
Instead of the Maltese Falcon.
Right. Yeah. Whereas at a con game, you got to scale that back.
One of the great things about that, though, if you're ever worried they're not going to go after what the plot's about, remember, you handed them the character. So you just write in the character that this really bothers you or you really care about this. So when it happens, they're going to kind of pick up this is the direction of the plot. I'm making notes here on some of the bigger points. We're going to come back to them, but I want to grab one more person and put them on the spot. Christopher, would you mind coming up here? Yes. No, the one behind you. I want to talk about your experience prepping for the con game. You were telling me about this yesterday. Now, how did this go down?
Prepping for the con game, refresh my memory?
You are going to run a game in
the
slot today, and you were preparing for it,
right.
And ended up getting pulled off because you had a lot of stuff going on at work, which is unrelated point.
Yeah.
But you told me that you had not GM'd in quite a while.
Yeah.
And by the time it was done, I mean, you had like game notes by Britannica in front of you.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. That sort of made it a bit, that sort of put the fear into me that it would run too long, that the time length would have gone over. Because I was thinking to myself, well, you know, I wrote certain points of contact that the characters would basically interact with. But if they chose not to, did I have something else prepared? You know, these were the things that I realized as a GM that you need to have.
Right.
You need to have something so in case that they say, okay, you know, screw this, I'm going to go to this person, that, you know, well, then you may lose the whole scene right then and there. So my concern was is that, yeah, I made some cool pre-generated characters, but did I have enough to go on besides just fumes?
Right.
And so that was the thing. So it might just have burned away at least the four of my pages right then and there. And then, of course, then it started to sort of snowball, because then after that I needed to get maps done, I needed to then have different other scenario points done, and by the time I was done, I'm like, this is going to be like a 4-hour game, this is going to be like a 6-hour game, and so how do I condense this?
Do you think it's better to sometimes plan to go over a little bit, like shoot over the time, and then as you're approaching that time limit, that you start cutting things out?
I'd say go the other way. Here's why. You don't want to be shooting so far under everyone's board after 20 minutes.
Or the campaign.
But if you finish a little bit early or even a lot early at a convention, that just gives people time to go somewhere else, do something else. And if they surprise you by really dawdling on a point, you've got buffer. If you overplan, then suddenly times come up and you guys haven't even left the fort or whatever. And that's...
Yeah.
So that's my take. Now, I'm sure... Now, Chris, you were disagreeing with me.
Well, no, I think that you should plan for more. You know, You know, I always have that little extra bit of content. Yeah, because you don't know what you're going to encounter. And you may be used to a certain way of GMing when it comes to the group that you're in, and you're going by those perceptions, thinking how this group, your regular group, would react to what you're going to do or what you've got planned, which, of course, you do that because that's your regular frame of reference, but you can't because, like you said, total strangers. You don't know what you're going to get. So it is good to overplan and then, yeah, adjust on the fly. You know, yeah, okay, maybe they did burn up 4 pages of stuff. Well, fortunately, I wrote out 7 more, so I do have, you know, I do have enough notes.
Right.
You might be able to go on with.
But then prepping for the con game, there's also the snag where sometimes I would see for the first hour from sometimes participating in a lot of games that it was explaining the mechanics of the rule systems themselves, which then takes up some time from the actual game time. And then when we start into the game time, then, of course, then those snags that you mentioned then start to come about, which then means that you may not have time to get that cliffhanger you have planned. You might not have time to get that finale, that slam-bang finale that you want.
And that, actually, that was, I think, that was probably a mistake that I made this year with the games that I ran, is that I wrote the event out, but I didn't necessarily allocate out the right amount of time that I would spend explaining rules and explaining how some of this stuff would go. Now, granted, the event still turned out all right, but you know, that was one thing that I didn't consider.
That's what,
going into these events.
That's what Grungy Dan did in the Shadowrun game I was in. You took like what, the first half hour, 45 minutes, of just explaining us. You know, not the, this is 300 pages of Shadowrun, page one.
Yeah, right.
You gave
it
us the rundown.
Dark and like, stormy night.
Yeah, yeah, and
like, there's this concept.
Right, and this is Grungy Dan, Fayetteville, Arkansas. You know, I had had a person in my game today that had been in the demo yesterday, and it was a lot heavier on that. Mm-hmm. But there's still that initial sort of, you know, yourself, you hadn't played since you were a teenager.
Right.
I had somebody else who hadn't played 4th edition. And there's that initial spin up to, these are the main differences. Other than that, I'm just going to tell you what to do during the game. Mm-hmm. But I actually jumped up here because I initially agreed with Chris. First off, I want to thank Marsh and Bob. And anybody that's got all of us on Twitter knows that I was in major freakout mode planning my game. And Marsh and Bob was like, no, calm down, you're fine, you know, and here's how I do this and you do that. So big thanks to him. But I actually took Chris's approach to the whole thing. And this was also kind of a concept that Bob was talking about, where you overplan. But in doing so, you do it kind of modular. So I can yank this entire kind of bubble out of the plot line. And so I kind of took the over-planning approach, but the problem I found as I ran it is I still came up a little short on time. I was really kind of pushing them through. I got really attached to a couple of my, quote, modular plot points, and I really, you know, I should have gotten them in and didn't get them in. But that initial time spent, you know, getting everybody kind of spun into the game and getting everything going. And then, you know, again, first time running a con game, I fell into the trap of letting the initial everybody getting into their mode sort of go on a little bit too long before really getting the
I didn't know that was your first con game.
Yeah, this is the first con game I've run.
It was good.
Other than demo yesterday.
Yeah. The only stumbling point, I don't mean to...
No, hey, Chris, hit me.
The only stumbling point I had with it was, like you were saying, the pacing. And you've never done it before, so you pulled it out fine.
You know what, actually, I got a question for you in regards to that, because you obviously, like you said, you had a variety of skilled players as far as their level of exposure to Shadowrun, which was the same thing I had for my D&D event. Had some who hadn't played, you know, since 2nd edition, a little bit of 3rd edition experience, or some just completely none at all. As far as explaining rules, concepts, and things like that, how much detail do you go into? Because with mine, I kind of explained some base mechanics that were universal. And then when it came to anything else, as far as combat or anything else that wanted to happen, I basically just said, we'll worry about that when we get to it. Same thing even kind of with the BattleTech event. I ran a little bit of the base concepts, but then we'll worry about the details when it actually happens. Because I want to limit the amount of time of all the prep thing. You know, here's the game. Here's what you're going to do. Now you've picked your character. I want to get that done as quickly as possible just so we can get moving.
I knew how likely the varying levels of experience with the game in itself and the version itself. So I kind of approached that during prep. So I covered it a few different ways. One major one was I made my own character sheet. Single-sided, everything that you need to actually run the character, aside from some crazy situation that comes up. And I, you know, anything that needed to be added together was pre-added. It was listed right there.
That was really helpful, by the way. Instead of... having, you know, there was a skill where most skills in most games are this skill plus this modifier plus this piece of equipment minus this attribute. Boom, 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 boom. Add it up. Make your roll. All of that is pre-added. All across the board, it's just all you had to do, he would say, you have this skill. Yes. Then roll that number. Boom. Everything was already done.
So I did that with a lot of the numbers. And then I also did, even in the blurb for my game, I told people, I'm going to try to get this to where if you don't know every little rule about this game, I'll be able to, cover that. You can't cover everything like that, but I had narrowed it down by combining things on the character sheet and things like that, down to the point that when it did come up to a situation, I had simplified, for example, it's Shadowrun that we're talking about, and I had simplified the hacking rules by using some optional stuff from another book and things like that, just to take a little bit of the complexity out to cover that sort of inexperienced player.
Let's start working through some of these issues. I want to see how you guys are going to handle them. First one that we got when Steve was up here was setting up a game for strangers. And let's assume that your issue here is not just you're nervous in front of a crowd. Because if that's the case, we talked about that an episode or two ago, and you know what to do with that. But let's say the issue is that you don't know how to design a game for a bunch of strangers. That you're used to running for a group, you know what they like, you know what they'll buy it at. You're walking into a kind of no idea who you're gaming for. What do you guys do? Come on up.
One quick sub-issue. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, all right, good.
Let's show up, Derek.
If you can just picture a messy noisily with a cup of Mountain Dew in it, this is about a typical episode. So,
all right. Sean, also knows
and I'm putting you on a two-minute limit, because when I interviewed you last year...
I was drunk last year.
Dude, you're one to talk about. You're one to talk about going on and on.
Well, you're one to talk.
Hey, Jay, okay. Shut up.
What I did... Going in, this is my first con game, but going into it, I knew that I would not know the people running for it. Scratch all that. Don't worry about the people you're going to be running the game for. Go back to the very first episode with the group template, and you design the team that you want to get the job done. You can even do this for a party if it's going to be a fantasy game. You design the entire team that you want to get the job done. And the way I divided up players was I just put the character sheets down. People sat down with them. Something else I did was I wrote up a quick synopsis, a couple paragraphs of the game world, what it was, and then a brief what your character knows, your character's personal history. Threw in some edges and hindrances, just some, like we had a couple heroic guys, we had a couple death wish guys, and let them go with it. And I just turned off, and the other thing was, when I originally wrote it, I had like 13 pages. Then I wound up cutting all that down to two encounters, because you got it. Like we were talking about it having to be railroady, it has to be railroady. You have to get them on the train and get the train moving.
Big point there is, normally in games, we are big fans of giving the players lots of control. In a con game, you're not going to, and you can't, for the simple reason that you don't have the time and you don't know who these people are. And something I have noticed, if this reassures anyone who's considering running a con game, is every time I've ever run a con game, participated in a con game, observed a con game, people come generally in a good mood and ready to game. Yes, there are jerks out there, but for the most part, if you tell people, this is kind of who you are and this is kind of what you're out there to do, they'll play along with that. I mean, you don't have to worry that these people are going to constantly try to shoot that down.
Just to play off of what he was talking about.
And this is Arthur, or Noble Bear. Again.
Oh, yeah, this is Noble Bear, Burlingame, California, just 20 minutes south of the city.
What are you, selling cars or something? Just 20 minutes outside of town.
Yes, that's right.
I'm going to sell the car in the next 2 minutes. I'm going to club this baby seal.
Hey, this is my dog Spot.
If you want a better deal, go see Cal. Anyways.
I know that song.
Can I get a trunk monkey from you? I'll buy a car if you just throw in a trunk monkey. That's all I want.
You got it, man.
If anybody doesn't know, it's a...
Okay.
We'll just cut that out, man.
Hilarious as ever, Pat. You should save that one for a party.
I'm so glad you're on this episode. You just totally made this episode.
That's a good question, John.
John, you need a seat for the mic?
Yeah, it was nice of you to join us. Continue, Arthur. Yeah. Not about cars.
Okay. Just a question for clarification. So, in other words, when a person's approaching a game for a con, is it better to think less of it like an interactive novel and better to think of it more like a video game. Because, like, in a video game, you have characters, but they're made for you. You have story, but it's more or less plotted out. And if you're playing, like, a survival horror JRPG, then you're more or less being railroaded through it. You're getting to do the things for the character. Like, if you're in Resident Evil 3, you're Jill Valentine. You've been dropped in the middle of Raccoon City, and so you've got a preset character for you, whether that's the character you like to play or not, but...
Right.
If you're playing an enemy, you can't be beaten as obnoxious, much like a DM.
Yeah.
Well, it's your mini series versus your ongoing dramatic series. You know, it's your Friday night movie of the week versus, you know, an episode or a season of Lost. You know, it's something that you want to accomplish.
I don't know that I would even say that way, because I think a lot more is going to happen in a movie than is going to happen in a con game. I mean, even though a con game may be 4 hours long, once again, as you're working past getting it set up, getting everyone to figure out what they're doing, the uncomfortableness, the pauses, the bathroom breaks. I would really say I'd think of it more like an extremely short story. And I'm not talking a Rudyard Kipling one. I'm talking about one that's like, you know, one of those like two or three page ones from the early 1900s. You know, those really short ones. Or you're just kind of getting a snip where, you know, there's an introduction, there's a little bit of plot, there's a climax and a resolution, and all of this you can boil down to probably two or three pages of generously spaced notes. And I'm not talking typed. If you can type it, it's probably one page.
Okay. So, like, for example, if you were planning something out, don't plan out, like, the entire spiel of the entire epic quest, but maybe boil it down to, okay, you just went to this epic quest, now here's the final boss fight, or here's the final dungeon.
Something like
that,
maybe. It'd be more like, okay, here's the epic quest, you gotta go get the sword back, here's how you get the job, here's a thing or two that can happen on your way to the Cave of Wonders or the Keep of the Borderlands or whatever horrible place you're headed. Right. And then, you know, okay, here's where you find it, here's a few potential complications, and here's the resolution. Okay. You know, nice and modular, real simple points.
Andy here, Sam Punk on the forums from Meridian, Mississippi. This was also my first con game. It's also my first dungeon crawl. And I think that really helped because I only had like one page of description. It wasn't really even for the dungeon. It was for like the pseudo NPC that was down there. And you get, my point is, you want to whitewash out a lot of the detail that you've been setting up as a GM. Because I want to run for stories, but I'm sitting here at the table and I'm like, my players had a lot of character in them, so I pretty much just let them define not only their characters, but the tone. They had like two sentences of character description, where they're from and what they were interested in. And I just let them carry the whole thing across. And I had no description and we barely squeaked in the time limit.
Modules, you know, you talk about the dungeon crawl, and that got me thinking, modules, if you absolutely cannot write a con game, grab a short module, not Temple of Elemental Evil. But...
5 years later.
But, you know, you grab a short couple, I mean, John, you ran Earthshaker.
Yeah, kind of. I had the module in front of me, and I said a few words that came out of it, but I don't know if it could really you said just, that I ran Earthshaker.
You just drew on it for,
exactly,
you know, inspiration.
But, yeah, I mean, modules are a good idea. They're easy for the quick and late. They suck, but yeah, I see you and the Milky Ore.
So this is Tim from New York City, and I ran a sort of interesting game which contradicts a lot of what's been said so far. Mine was a very interactive story game featuring characters who were the Fear the Boot hosts.
Uh-huh.
And essentially everybody goes in with a little bit of motivation. You know, here's your goal for the game, a little bit of backstory, here's the events leading up to the game, just about a paragraph. But then with that open-ended entrance, where do you start if you have players who have maybe gotten up a little too early after up a little too late at night? This was honestly the only problem with this game this morning. Everybody seemed a little bit tired.
You know, I think at least in situations like that, like you just described, a lot of that responsibility then falls back onto you, and that you've got to step in there and make sure they have the energy. You know, one of the things before, are you okay?
Wow. We're knocking them off their seats. Yeah. Best episode ever.
Oh, look. Chris is talking again. Good night. My battle thing event today, I was exhausted this morning. I went to the movie last night. I knew some of the people did as well.
Are they still serving food?
Yeah, I just woke up.
Beltic.
Yeah. And so, but, and not that this is because it wasn't, were you talking to me? Anyway, but, I knew I had to go in there and try and get everybody excited because I knew the event itself was going to be complex in and of its for its own reasons. And so I threw in a bunch of extra stuff in there to get them motivated and get them excited and moving. And it worked. And Chad, who was not at the event, came. Yeah, you were talking about everyone.
Your table had this huge energy level to it. I mean, everyone was pumped and cheering and going. And it's like, man, most of these people got like 5 hours of sleep last night.
You know, there's a great side note there, which is be excited yourself. And even if you're not, look excited. Because if you look tired, you look uncertain, your players are not going to rise above where you're at in all probability.
Yeah, all of that stuff is contagious.
That's one piece of advice that I would have, too. And this is one of those, oh, yeah, that's easy for you to say things, is that as a game master and you're running a con event, you want to have a high amount of energy. And it's like the last, I've noticed like the last hour, as that time limit is approaching, the energy level of the game master, they're looking at the clock like, oh, crap, I gotta, yeah, come on, let's go. And then the players are like, yeah, they're going into it. If you can translate that last hour of super energy into the whole game that you're doing and just get it going and pumped and going and pumped, then that would be a really good game. I mean, obviously, that's not something that you can maintain over a long campaign on your normal gaming session because you have your ups and downs. But, yeah, I mean, you want a lot of sort of adventure and action and get people really pumped in your game. But like I said, it's easier said than done when you get, like, 2 hours of sleep and you've been up for 3 days and you don't even know what a shower looks like.
Right, yeah. The conclusion that I came to was you really have to railroad in the very beginning and get things started.
Well, now, Tim,
just
let me ask you something.
Activation energy out.
Let me ask you something, because actually what you're describing sounds pretty close to what everyone else has been saying. You had simple, archetypical characters, because we're fairly poorly developed characters.
It's true.
You had a basic plot, real simple. Here's a problem. Maybe here's a few complications. Here's where it might go. And pretty much, you know, you, like I said, you railroad a little bit, just kind of let it go. And it sounds actually pretty similar. So I guess I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm trying to understand. Mm-hmm. Where does that differ? You know, what was the distinction between that and let's say...
I think the distinction between what I think my game was about was that because of the way the setting or of the system worked, everybody literally gets to put truth into the game. You know, without getting into gaming stories, it's a bidding system that lets people narrate the game, and then that's fact, that's plot,
they get
that's
some
story.
Right.
Yeah, they get a lot of ownership.
So getting
the activation energy up to get people to narrate to.
Yeah. If you kind of come up with some plot railroad and let them participate, obviously we understand how that works. But how do you, coming into a con, and you can't guarantee anything, but how do you do your best to make sure that when you try to get people involved and let them have a stake and let them develop it, that they're not either, number one, going to do something really stupid. Now, I guess you're running a comedy game, so it hardly matters.
Right.
But particularly if you're running a serious game, or even worse, God forbid, they do nothing.
That was, I felt, sort of a problem towards the beginning. Like I said, low energy, people seemed a little tired, and I floundered. I got lost. You know, how do I get this started? They've got their motivations right there, and I've explained everybody needs to jump in and take a little bit of narrative. And
how much of it is the game master's responsibility to get everyone pumped, and how much of it is the individual player's responsibility just to get them pumped and get them going? Every con game I have played in this con and last con and other con, there has always been at least one person at the table who just kind of sits there and is basically observing.
Players have got to get into it, because they're going to participate in this game for various reasons. I'm going to an Earthbound game here in the next slot, and I'm doing it primarily because I haven't played Earthbound in years. That in and of itself is enough to excite me. And I found it to be similar with the events that I ran. Those players are excited to be there, and you've got to take that excitement to the table and just go with what's there.
Actually, you might forget Evan, because he's been standing there like he's waiting for a bus for about the past half hour.
Like, hey man, the guys with kilts pushed in line.
I tried to prepare a game for the con.
Evan, and where are you from?
Terre Haute, Indiana. I've learned Goldfish on the forums. So I tried to prepare a game for the forum. Somebody said, hey, I want to learn 4E. Can somebody run a game?
Right.
This was at school. And partially it was just the group of individuals that I had together. It was mixing a whole bunch of volatile chemicals and then snorting it. I tried to do, you know, an introduction, get the players, you know, to a dungeon, have a couple encounters. But that first part of getting them to the first encounter took 5 hours, and I was pulling my hair out. So... At that point, I realized I'm not going to be able to force this into a, you know, 4-hour slot and gave up. But, I mean, I gave it a try at least.
What were you doing for 5 hours?
Walking to the town, and well, I was trying to drop some hints about, you know, background along the way.
No.
Yeah, I was trying to introduce things slowly, like it was like a real game, and instead of, you know, shoving it down their throats, which it would have worked significantly better, I now realize.
Yeah.
You guys are going south? You need to go north. Well, what's the clue? Tell me that. No. I'm telling you.
No.
Go north.
No. They knew where they were going, but at every like little hint that I was dropping along the way, they wanted to pursue it until they could bleed no more blood out of it. Actually, they tried to bleed all the blood out of it, and there just wasn't anybody to bleed right there, so they were really frustrated, sadly.
At that point, I just straight up and tell them that a game.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a side quest for 2 hours later. Go beat the dragon.
Your kilt's on fire.
Yeah, it's Zeke Copperize from Indianapolis, Indiana. One of the few tough bitches we got. And I just wanted to make a comment on the player energy. I was running a D&D The Narrative, basically just freewheeling, complete improv D&D adventure. And I really got to thank my players for the amount of energy they put into it, because not 8 minutes before I started that game, I had just finished up a crunch-heavy, high-level D&D adventure, so I was out of it. They just put as much energy as they could into it and just mutually built. They built my energy up, I built their energy up, and it just was wild. So, yeah, I wanted to make that point.
You know, it is, speaking of that, related to that, it is, I think, a very good exercise too. If you have the opportunity to run a con game, you should, primarily because of the fact that it gets you as a game master out of your comfort zone. You know, all three things that I ran, I have no idea what to expect, and I go in there with my own ideas and how I run things, and these guys are throwing things back at me that kind of makes me reevaluate what I'm doing and kind of helps sharpen some of the skills of mine that may have gotten soft, you know, over time.
I mean, it really seems like the ultimate moral to the story is slow down, settle down, don't overthink it, and just get out there and try it.
But then keep that energy level really, really high all the time.
So do everything perfect.
And don't take any pressure from the fact that people paid money and traveled hundreds of miles to play this game. You know? Yep. So, you know, and so yeah, show up at least and run the damn game.
John, what do you have to say about that? Game masters who show up late to the games this guy.
Well, Chad, some game masters have important things to do with their lives that are 2 hours away from cons. With 100 miles of highway in between, you
and there,
it might be 30 minutes late. Big friggin' deal.
Somebody get that man some cheese.
But for my crunch-heavy game, I probably spent almost 20 hours of prep work getting everything lined up and right. And
don't spend that much time on my normal weekly games.
I've been working on it for months, just here and there. But literally for my narrative game, I put a couple hours of work into basic 3 or 4 line character descriptions, the starting point, ending point, and just went with the flow for the rest of it. And maybe 3-4 hours, and I had an absolute blast with this game. I could not possibly imagine running a better con game myself.
So it sounds like you enjoyed the narrative. Do you think you enjoyed the narrative more than the crunch heavy one, or?
It was a lot more back and forth and role playing, and just everyone got real into their characters, just went way off, took one line, confidence reserved only for kings, and just went crazy with it.
And so is this sort of like a whose D&D is it anyway, and you're sort of like the Clive Owen of of the D&D world? Because I would love that. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I had a basic idea where to start. I knew it wanted to end with a fight with a dragon, but it's just whatever they wanted to do to get from point A to point B, go with it. It's just... My sides hurt laughing so much from that game. So
I talked to you briefly this morning about that. That does sound like a lot of fun. So you'll have to do that next year, and I will definitely sign up for that one, because that sounds awesome.
I'll definitely do it again,
and I'll just sit there and not say anything though.
I mean, you know.
He will.
Thanks.
Don't jump in. Kind of like now.
All right, Dr. Henson, come on back. Oh, we're sending Ed?
Yeah, sending Ed.
Send in the Ed.
What the hell is
that? Oh, put together.
Whoa.
Okay.
We'll take you both. Bring it.
You guys are going to sing, aren't you?
I think we're back. Player Energy is what brought us up here. And this is Grungy Dan again. I'm up here with...
This is Ender Melchior from Indianapolis.
Yeah, and
Boston makes me feel good. That game was fantastic, by the way.
Oh, the game he's talking about, Ed ran Savage Ghostbusters yesterday, and, you know, he kicked it up a notch right as soon as we sat down, passed out characters, and immediately went into, like, because he's in Melchior, and he will mushroom stamp you.
He doesn't even have to try.
But, and it really helped, and we did have a couple of people at the table that were suffering that initial sort of, I don't want to talk, I don't know how where to go with this. But, you know, between Ed and then Chad's insane and Doctor... And,
yes, sir.
And so, you know, but I think it's absolutely imperative that the players try to bring as much energy as they can muster to that game, because you're going to pick up those other players that are around you, and they're going to start really kind of jiving.
That was something that I noticed, like, between you and I, because you and I we're the loud obnoxious guys.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're sitting there, we're, like, going back and forth and doing this character stuff and going back and forth. And I don't know if you noticed this, but I did, and I think you did, too, is where you and I kind of pulled it back a little bit,
yeah,
because we were kind of starting to overwhelm the people around us, and they were getting quiet, and there was one point where it's like something, the party got separated, and something happened in the room, and I was in the room with two of the quiet guys, and I think, Ed, you wanted me to, or at least someone, to do this thing to advance the plot. I refused to do it. I just kept on playing around and just narfing around, and then I wanted to force those two guys to do it so they can get into it. That kind of would open that door for them.
Yeah,
too.
You got to strike a balance because, you know, like you were saying, we're really loud and obnoxious, especially at a gaming table. And so, you know, if you don't
Yes, doctor.
Yes, doctor.
Yes, doctor.
I'm a scientist. If you don't pull it back a little bit, you also run the risk of being that jerk that's just running roughshod over everybody. And so you have to know, like, okay, I'm trying to get these guys excited, but I've got to let them do it. You know, I got to let them jump in, too.
But on the other hand, if there is an outlier observer type player, and they're everywhere, and there's nothing wrong with that, you don't really want to pull teeth to get them to talk at the PC, or because they don't want to. You don't really want them to if they don't want to. So just be the loud guy and scream over.
Something I tried in my games this year that had sort of mixed results, in that in both games it both helped and hurt a little bit, was when I passed out the character sheets, I made it very clear which were the talkative characters and which were the leader characters. So somebody picking that knew what they were getting into. They're already telling me, at least on some level, that they're willing to be talkative. And then when I started the game, instead of having them all in a room together and somebody comes in to talk to them, it was one guy. It was a Transformers game, so basically you're reactivated, laying on a pallet, and there's a guy next to you who is talking to you, not to a room of you, to you. And it forced one person to talk, and then I would add a second person to that. And it was a little slow, which was the downside. It took a little while to get through that, and it was kind of, honestly, it was a little bit boring, but it worked, and that was the upside to it. It got everyone talking and used to playing their characters.
Yeah, that's what Wayne over there, he came up to me, and he was saying, it's just like, that Transformers game, the best game I've ever played in my life. And it's like, you've only ever played five games in your life, but great! And so I he was saying, it's like, well, you know, at first it was a little slow, but it kept ramping up and ramping up. And maybe that's a way to solve that sort of energy, always on energy problem, is that if you start out at a low point, but end at a really high point, everybody's going to remember that your game was fantastic. If you start out low or high, but end low, that's what people are going to remember. It's like, yeah, it was good, but and that's what they're going to talk about.
What you got, Ed? Don't be bashful.
Well, just starting off to get people to start off with that high energy level is when you're running a con game, is to run something that you know immediately just by the title itself will get people excited. Or as Chad was telling me over text, get sprung.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah. You know, and actually, we've not talked about that angle, but there's a big angle.
Sprung?
We talked about a lot in the first episode we did on Con Game, which is the importance of the title and the description of the game, that you give people an instant idea of what the game is like, what they're going to be doing, what they're going to be playing, what they need to know. And you're right, you do a lot to sell it right there.
And so, you know, like what I did, it was just immediately, it's like, oh, what's the one thing I know that no matter who comes in, everyone will love?
Ghostbusters.
That's right.
So when you're doing a con, you just really want to do something that you know everyone can get into.
Scott, come on up.
You two jokers get out of here.
This is Scott from Scott X Rex from St. Louis. I just
St. Louis, man. You spare no expense coming out here.
Crazy the gas money.
Yeah.
Real quick comment about this energy thing. I was in the game by Zeke Copper Eyes yesterday, the D&D of the Narrative. I think it was possible to move fast, get a lot done, and have a lot of energy because it was almost entirely rules-free. No dice, no charts, no numbers on the character sheet. Things were resolved as fast as the DM could say something. And I think that it relied very heavily on everyone being very invested and being able to run and run and run. But also by having no rules, you allow that ball to roll faster and faster and faster.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's a good point because from what I've seen, and this is just observations, I don't have a real big, you know, length of experience with this, with con games in general, but I've noticed that a lot of con games tend to be combat heavy because, you know, combat fills a certain amount of time. The combat is rip-roaring adventure. And
well, when there's character
easy to run,
well, it's extremely when character easy. Choices, you don't know what people are going to do. When someone's trying to kill them, you know what they're going to do.
And I think that's the interesting counterpoint to that. I guess the philosophy that the argument of that is to run a game without any combat whatsoever, or at the very least, very minimalist combat. And I don't know. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer with that.
Anyone want to come up and talk about that? What do you think the role of combat is in a con game? Good, bad, helpful, unhelpful?
Well, I did try and make my Battletech scenario nothing but role-playing, but they just didn't quite work out.
Okay,
you
I know
just
from
didn't
the hat,
try hard enough, Chris.
From the hat, I know where you're from.
No, I'm living here in St. Louis, not from St. Louis. Anyway, name's James, not on the forums. I think the use of combat is... depends on the purpose of why you're playing the game. So far, I've sat down at 2 con games, and the whole reason I wanted to sit down and play them is just because I've never played them before.
Right.
And I wanted to know if I liked the system.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, yeah, combat's important because you need to figure out the system.
Yes.
You want to know if you like it. If you're playing something that you've played for decades and you want to get in it for nostalgia or whatever the hell, combat's not so important because you're just there to have a really good time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to remember your purpose for playing the game. If your purpose is to figure out if you're going to like it, combat's a big deal. If it's not, and you know you like it, it's not so big deal. And going back to your point on whose responsibility is to keep the energy up, I think it's kind of a 50-50 split. If the GM starts to slag, you guys are there to have fun. Step up to the plate and get it going. And also, I think the most important thing for any GM that's running a con game is to be confident.
Right.
If you walk up there and you're paperweight and can be pushed over, your game's going to suck. Whereas if you walk up there and you know the game enough well enough to run it, and the players can tell that and trust you, they're willing to follow you where you want them to go.
Even if that's not true, fake it.
Yeah, exactly. If you're scared out of your mind, they can. Gamers can. We're all dorks. We're all beat up in freaking high school. We can smell fear.
Yeah,
and we're gonna.
Wow.
Well, and quite honestly, you should be. You should be nervous when you go sit down at the table because you don't know what to expect.
Yeah,
you got your rules. Yeah, you got your scenario. You're ready to go. But you don't know what the other 6 at that table are going
to
do to you.
Yeah, and I agree. There is another side to this, which is we're talking about GMing and running games. But certainly, if you're listening to this as a player of games, which obviously the vast majority of people here are.
Help your GM out.
Come with a good attitude.
He's put a lot of the work into that. He's freaking risking his balls going up there and a lot of his confidence. Don't eat him up.
Right, exactly.
Sit down. Do your thing. I'm an obnoxious, loud out hole myself. And
great, isn't it?
Yeah. But you got to, I mean, it's like you guys are saying, restrain, let the guys go at it. And also, I'm on the side note, and I'm going to take the rest of my answer off air. This is my second convention. The first one was in Gen Con, and I hated it. And this has been a lot better. You guys have been great. I appreciate it. And I think we should give Sean, wherever Sean went, a big round of applause because he's still sober and hasn't passed out at a table yet.
Wait, is that applause or is that a disappointment? I don't.
Well,
everybody has goals.
We brought permanent markers this year. So
yeah. We did have that guy last year.
Yeah, that was him.
That was him.
Oh, that was him. Yeah. Oh, wow.
He came back.
Give that guy my hand.
Thank you, Captain Oblivious. We appreciate you helping out.
I was running games, man, and I was drunk myself.
I will say, while we're getting the next person up, that is one of the great things I've loved about this con is just the quality of people that are here, which is something that obviously has nothing to do with us as the hosts. We can put the con on, but we have no control over what you people do once you're in the door. But just how friendly, welcoming, energetic everyone is. Tim?
So the way my game ran is it ended up being the two different genres on the same plot line. My first group made it into a personal horror campaign where during the final showdown with the end villain, they ended up resolving it on his terms and defeated him at his own game. Very, very simple, very, very effective. Brilliant ending to the game. The second group made it a sort of pile up all your resources and go in gunning. And there was an amazing bloody showdown where Dan's titanium steel, his custom-built titanium gaming shelf was made into a mech and just crushed everything.
Everything. Yeah, I mean, that's true.
It makes sense.
You said this was an extreme weird game.
Yeah, and the...
Sounds realistic, so...
I tend to view combat as a good thing, but I also feel it's a crutch. I'm of the personal horror.
I've been saying that for years. No one believes
combat is, as far as I'm concerned, is largely a crutch. It has its role. It's a good role, but you know, I think you can do games both with and without it. So for cons, it can be a plus. It can be a minus. It depends on your style, what you like in a game. And as for being a player, I always go in as obnoxious and loud as I can and, you know, try and pull people in. Mm-hmm. So that's where I go.
And you have a fan. That's awesome.
Just an observation on my point. Oh, this is Noble Bear again. Just an observation on my point. I actually have really been enjoying combat a lot more, not only in my gaming experiences outside of this, but just in what little role play I've been doing here at the con. And it's like, for example, I was in Martian Bob's Cthulhu demo, and it was fun getting to roll lots of dice and then adding up the damage, and then Bob's like, you killed him twice, and I'm like, yeah, you know, it's just bring the awesome. And that's just it. It's like you come to have fun, not be too cerebral, and so combat allows you to have more fun and bring more awesome to the game, and so I like that.
My name is Tom Klein. I'm from Scott Air Force Base. And from my experience in con games, yes, combat frequently is a feature of them. But in a lot of the games in some of the games I've played, combat hasn't been a big feature of the game because of either the setting or the game. And I don't think combat is required for a game to be good. More so, conflict.
Yes, yeah. Dead right.
I would totally agree with you. To me, I don't like action games, but I love adventure games.
Well, say, and even as someone who does enjoy combat, I will absolutely agree with what he's saying, that the important thing is that there's some sense of conflict, and you as a GM, you don't have to be so limited as conflict requires a sword or a gun. There's many kinds of conflict. I ran a game last year where, ran it twice, both times resolved almost no combat. One side turned it into diplomacy, the other time side turned it into kind of a James Bond stealth thing. There's tons of tension and conflict, but almost no combat.
What if Zeb Cook has an hour's worth of dialogue boxes you have to read before you can go anywhere with your game?
Then you blow it up with an elephant.
I want to ask Zeb Cook that.
Because it's in there.
I know.
All right, Andy, what's on your mind?
I was just going to say that the whole the conflict thing is everyone understands the combat aspect of the game. It gives them a focus because you have all these rules for killing stuff. People have read those rules. It gives them all a focus to go on, gives them all a one general direction to work in. Now, saying that, both games I've played in this con have been the complete opposite of that, where the combat actually sent us off in billions of different directions.
Chris, you're going to get the closing, not you. The other one.
No. We never let you.
The one I respect. Christopher, you got the closing.
Well, I know you guys want to wrap this up. I just want to speak from the bottom of my heart, and maybe what other people are thinking here, that you guys have put together an excellent con, and I want to say that, you know, you guys stepping up on the mics like you do all the time, it takes balls to do that. Serious balls.
Told you I had balls. Yeah.
And you guys...
It may not be blue and swaying, but...
Exactly. And you guys have planted seeds of awesome in the role-playing community. And I guess I wanted to thank you and...
I know it sounds really corny to say this, but I want to thank you guys. I mean, It's the community. No, I mean,
it's true.
It really is.
We sit here on mics every week and masturbate, but it's the fact that you guys actually enjoy it.
Actually, if we have that masturbation show, nobody listens to it. I don't know.
Love you too.
There is nothing more pointless and stupid than gaming without good people.
Yes.
Here we all are.
Absolutely. Yes. And it is absolutely true what I've said before. I mean, we would have thrown in the towel probably back on episode 20 or 30 if it had not been for just the quality of people that have come to join this community. So, I mean, we are greatly in your debt.
It's a fantastic community. Thank you, guys. Thank all the people who showed up. Thanks all the people who listened to us over the years. It's all about you guys. It's all about the community, and it's all about this hobby that we all love. And that's why we do this. It's because we all love this hobby, and we're excited about it. We want to get other people excited about it.
And you know what else? Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.